Welcome. My name is Katarzyna Monika Pawlak. I'm the social media trainee editor of UWiG Journal, and you're listening to UWiG Journal podcast. Each episode will highlight one of the most relevant articles recently published in the journal in order to learn from the most up-to-date evidence and discuss with the authors the relevant findings of their research.
Welcome to the UWiG Journal podcast on the paper Functional Bowel Disorders with Diarrhea, Clinical Guidelines of the United European Gastroenterology and European Society for Neurogastroenterology and Motility, published in June in UWiG Journal. My name is Iago Rodriguez. I am a trainee editor of the journal and gastroenterologist in Bilbao, Spain, and I'm glad to welcome Dr. Savarino from the Department of Surgery, Oncology, and Gastroenterology at the University of Padua in Italy, who will join me today for this interview. Dr. Savarino, welcome. It is a great pleasure to have you here today, and congratulations for your great paper. You have worked with more colleagues in this paper, so please introduce yourself and the whole team that participated in these guidelines.
Thank you, Iago, for the kind invitation. Thank you for the interest in our paper and our work that we believe that is really, really relevant for our daily clinical practice. This guideline focuses on the diagnostic assessment therapeutic approach in patients with IBS, D, and functional diarrhea, and was done by the leading society of the European Society of Neurogastroenterology and Motility, supported by UAG and many other societies which are sister of UAG Federation. We included a total of 30 experts from 10 European countries in order to have a broad view of the diseases and of the methods to treat and diagnose these patients.
Great. Thank you. That gives a very nice overview of the working group, but can you tell us and can you explain why do you think and all the whole team consider that these guidelines are important for our practice?
This is, first of all, I have to say that this is the first guideline published in medical literature focusing on this special condition which are IBSD and functional diarrhea. And so, as first guideline, we believe that this was necessary for our daily clinical practice. The other important thing to underline is that these conditions are very, very common in daily clinical practice. More or less, about half of the patients we see in outpatient clinics, in gastroenterology outpatient clinics, report symptoms of diarrhea that in most of the cases are related to functional condition and in particular IBSD or functional diarrhea. So a guideline suggesting on how to diagnose them and how to treat them, we believe that was mandatory and clinically relevant for all physicians who face front these conditions.
Thank you. That sounds really, really attractive because they are focusing on a very big population of patients. And well, can I ask you about the main difference between both disorders, the IBS diarrhea and the functional diarrhea that you approached in these guidelines?
Sure. We prefer to include both conditions in these guidelines since they are more frequently diagnosed, and very frequently it happens that they cannot be distinguished very clearly by the physician and also by the patient. This the main issue which distinguish IBSD and functional diarrhea is the presence of pain, abdominal pain. But you know, patient may have diarrhea without pain or without bloating, and may be diagnosed with this condition. I mean, it's probably more a diagnostic and differentiation that derived more from literature, medical literature, than clinical practice, but could be really, really relevant because in some country there are treatments that are licensed for IBS-D and not for functional diarrhea, and there are different drugs and which are maybe available for patients with IBS-D and not for functional diarrhea. So the opportunity and the ability and the capacity of distinguish the two conditions may be relevant for each one. Moreover, some treatments are more related for the management of pain, of the pain and of bloating, and not really for the diarrhea. And so the ability of the physician to distinguish the two conditions could be relevant for direct the right therapy to the right patient.
Great. Thank you for all these details, because I think they will make a very bit different when we approach these patients from now. And well, now we have the working group and we have both disorders with its definition. And well, how did you identify the questions for these guidelines?
The main question derived mainly from the, our daily clinical practice. We met for deciding, first of all, the leaders of the guidelines met for deciding which questions were more relevant. Then we share with the other authors the question, and we ask for additional input to improve or to increase the number of these questions. Also, we consulted some patients with this condition in order to have some feedback from them, which for them were more relevant for their clinical life and for their social life and clinical condition, which may impair their daily clinical life, daily life. And so we came with this 30 question that face front not only the general epidemiology and the clinical sign and symptoms related to this two condition, but also with the main question that arise from the outpatient clinic visits. Which tests should I do? Which one is the best for the patient? Which treatment should be used? And which treatment should not be used for this patient?
Great, thank you, because I think that approach in a guideline makes it even more attractive for clinicians, because sometimes they are not really focused on the real life of the patient and the real life of our clinic. So thank you for that initiative. And well, can you explain, well, when we are now facing a patient with a functional diarrhea or a suspicion of IBS diarrhea, can you tell us how the diagnostic assessment should be performed?
Yeah, this is an important question, and indeed it's very, very relevant, because we have to choose the right diagnostic approach in order to reduce the number of tests that we can do in clinical practice, to reduce the burden, the economic burden related to that, not only for the health system, country health system, but the patient that very, very frequently have to pay for doing this kind of examination. First of all, I would like to underline that the Rome Foundation, which is the main society which is busy, which is working on this condition, and also UAG as well as ESNM, suggests that the diagnosis of IBS-D and functional diarrhea is a symptom-based approach, requires a symptom-based approach as compared with the diagnostic strategy of exclusion. So it is not an exclusion diagnosis, but it is a symptom-based diagnosis. And however, a minimal diagnostic assessment is mandatory in order to exclude organic disorder. And so far, you can see from the paper that in a patient who present with abdominal pain or functional diarrhea with or not with bloating, it is suggested to do a full blood count, a CRP assessment, serology for celiac condition, and fecal calprotectin. Fecal calprotectin is, I believe, mandatory for patients with diarrhea in order to exclude mainly inflammatory bowel disorder, but it is also very, very helpful to exclude also infectious disease involving the whole GI tract. If an abnormality is identified, of course, we need to do more tests and more examination. Otherwise, we can be quite confident that the diagnosis is IBS-D or functional diarrhea, and we can start treating the patient with the best therapeutic approach.
Great, thank you, because I think that makes a little difference between the recent years where these patients are undergoing repeated colonoscopies, repeated endoscopies, or other examinations. So that's really important to change our mind in this approach. And some cases, they also undergo upper endoscopy. So did you reach a consensus about the upper endoscopy and the exclusion of celiac disease, for example?
Yes, of course. We search medical literature and we, of course, analyze which is the evidence currently available. And we stated that the serology is sufficient enough to decide if it is necessary or not to undergo an upper endoscopy or also a colonoscopy if fecal calprotectin does not provide enough evidence of the lack of organic disease. You know, as you clearly and rightly suggested and highlighted, our focus is to limit the access to the endoscopy suite for patients who do not need to undergo endoscopic examination. We have really, really long waiting lists for this test, and we should focus this test in patients who are likely to have diseases that can be identified with this test. So upper endoscopy is not recommended as first line of diagnostic approach in this patient, although if a patient have a positive serology or if patient have a severe aggravating symptoms suggested that there is more than only a functional condition, of course, you have to do more tests, and probably also the upper endoscopy is one of the tests you will do for a right assessment for your patient.
Great. Thank you for the details and the feedback on this topic. And well, we have come through all the diagnoses and all the examinations. And my final question will be about the treatment. Well, we have now the patient with a clear diagnosis of one of these two disorders. Well, did you conclude about the treatment algorithm or the drugs that are approved for both diseases? Can you tell us about this or even the unmet needs for the future in this field?
As we underline for the diagnostic approach, also the therapeutic approach is very, very different country by country and physician by physician. First, because the availability of the drugs is not the same, although also in Europe, also on the same country, also in Italy, for instance, and also there is a limited evidence for the use of different drugs in these two different conditions. I would like to underline that most of the evidence we found was developed for patients with IBS-D, while the evidence for functional diarrhea is very, very limited because there are very, very few studies which focus on this subgroup of patients. We did not provide an algorithm and saying this is the first approach, this is the second approach, this is the third approach. We just identified the therapeutic drugs which have the most evidence to be used has a strong recommendation, weak or moderate recommendation, or the drugs or the therapeutic approach which do not have enough evidence to recommend for, and so we recommend against. As for each issue, each topic, we recommended in favor of the use of low FODMAP diet, the use of eluxadoline, the use of loperamide, rifaximin, and gut-directed psychological therapy. There is also evidence that tricyclic antidepressants may work in selected patients, and there was a weak moderate recommendation in favor for the use of bile acid sequestrants, antispasmodic agents, 5-HT3 antagonists, and probiotics. On the other hand, we did not find enough evidence to recommend the use of gluten-free diet, mesalamine, fecal microbiota transplantation, and the use of SSRI drugs. This is important because there are very, very common from physicians to recommend a gluten-free diet or the use of mesalamine in patients with diarrhea. However, there is not enough evidence to suggest that they have a role in the management of these patients. So please read with caution and carefully the guidelines and select the therapeutic approach that has the strongest evidence to be useful for our patients.
Great, thank you, because these patients, I think that similar to the diagnostic assessment, they also go through many different treatments, many different drugs, and we try different drugs with a heterogeneous evidence, so they need to be guided for the most effective and the really approved drugs.
Indeed. And I would like to conclude saying that we have a clear need here for new therapeutic approaches for this patient, because the currently available therapeutic approach work in a minority of the patient. And more frequently, you have to associate the different available possibility to obtain an adequate control of the symptoms. But it's clear that we need more drugs, more possibilities for treating adequately patient. And here, research, but also the support from country health system and the companies should be more strong to obtain more for our patients.
Indeed, totally agree with all your points about all the topics in both disorders. So thank you for being here and for sharing with us all your conclusions and all the evidence-based recommendations that you provide in this paper. And thank you for being here with us, Dr. Savarino.
Thank you, UAG, and thank you, everyone, for listening us. And please read the paper and treat your patient in the best way you can.
We hope that you enjoyed this interview, and please subscribe for further updates. Thank you, and see you again.